Hello, I'm Tony Ryan in Adelaide, South Australia, with a series of interviews with contributors to New Male Studies. This open access international journal is available online. You can find it on newmalestudies.com. That's newmalestudies.com. For many young men today, their formative years are lived without a father. Joseph Campo, director of the St. Francis House in Brooklyn, New York, is passionate about his work in mentoring young men in what he describes as a fatherless society. And it is his strong belief in the centrality of a father or male mentor in the lives of young men that is the theme of his article in New Male Studies, Volume 2, Issue 1, 2013. This Skype interview with Joe Campo was recorded in February 2013.
Joe Campo, for the benefit of those of us who may live far from New York City, what is the St. Francis House and who comes to stay there?
Sure. Well, the St. Francis House is a home for young men ages 18 and up who need a second chance in life. And the type of person that comes here, usually it's their last stop. It's not unusual to have a young man come here who has maybe been incarcerated or have been through the system, if you will. And they've tried out all other places and they've run out of alternatives. And you wind up and you land here at the St. Francis House in Brooklyn, New York. And what's really interesting is that they used to come a lot to this house simply because they had drug and alcohol problems and so forth. And that's kind of leveled off quite a bit, actually. What's interesting is that young men that come to the house now, who have run out of alternatives, usually come here for other reasons, you know. And there's a good chance that some of them have been in trouble. Most of them have. They're still the finest young men I've ever met in my life, to be honest with you. As a matter of fact, I don't think I've ever met an alcoholic or a drug addict that I didn't like when they were sober. So, you know, heart, people with big hearts people with big hearts get their hearts broken fairly as well. But the young men that come here are usually suffering, if you will. And from many different types of things. You know, what's really interesting, that a lot of people that come here now are addicted to video games. Amazing. They spend a tremendous amount of time communicating with an inanimate object, with a game. And in the end, they don't win or lose. But it's amazing, you know, I watch them go through all the emotions of anger and frustration, and then being elated when they win at the end, you know. I think the endorphins that are going through their brain for a long period of time changes the way they think about themselves as well. And I find this a very big problem, because I don't really allow them to play video games when you come to the house. That's a taboo, if you will. And if you have time to play video games, you're probably not going to be happy here, because you're either working in school or both.
Joe, tell me briefly about the history of the house.
Okay. The St. Francis House was opened in 1967. And it was opened by a very good friend of mine, Father Benedict Rochelle, who was a Catholic priest, a Franciscan friar. He looks like a monk, if you saw him. And he opened up the home because he was the chaplain at a place called Children's Village up in Dobbs Ferry, New York. And back in 1967, before all the laws that we have today, a young man could be released on his 17th birthday from the home. Now, someone that would go to Children's Village had no family, or if they had a family, they were better off without their family, quite frankly. They came from cruel situations and abuse situations. But at 17 years old, back in 1967, you were released. And Father Benedict knew of two young men who were being released on their birthday, and they were from Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And he was very concerned about these boys. And so he came to Greenpoint to look for a place where they would live so they would not go back to the streets. And the St. Francis House was born. He invested some money into it, and these two boys, Bobby and Jimmy, lived at the house for quite a few years, and That was back in 1967.
And here we are, what, 40-something years later?
Yeah, I think it's 46 or 47 years later. I came on the scene 23 years ago. Father Benedict really actually was going to close the house. He just couldn't find anybody crazy enough to kind of take it over. I showed up on the scene, and I fell in love with it.
Why did you do that? Why did you become involved?
Yeah, it's something I wanted to do my entire life, was to work with the poor. I didn't grow up poor. I didn't grow up in Brooklyn. If anybody knows anything about Brooklyn, you move from Brooklyn to Long Island, and that's how it works. And that's a step up in class and, you know, in education and everything. And so my family moved out when I was born, and I did the opposite. I moved from Long Island to Brooklyn, and really, it was really my heart's desire. And the only way that I could actually work with the poor was to move back to where the poor was. And I had a conversion experience in my life back in 1988. And after that conversion experience, I knew that God was calling me to something very important. The work, I felt, was extremely important, and that I was being sort of guided to go in this area. And I did. I took the chance.
Mm-hmm. Joe, I read that most, if not all, of these young men have grown up without a father in their lives. What effect does the absence of a father have on a young man?
Yeah, it's a good question. It has everything to do with the young man. It has everything to do with his being. From the time he is very, very little to the time, of course, he becomes a man. And, you know, when the young men come here without a father figure, that's my role in the house, Tony. I am the father figure, and let there be no mistake of it. There are lines. I'm an adult. I expect to be treated like an adult. I'm a father figure. I expect to be treated that way. And when you draw these lines, you find that young men appreciate that, because they know where they stand. You know, I've had situations in life where, you know, the young men came in and have never had a positive male role model in their life. And they're 18 years old, or they're 17 years old, or they have a brother who's 15 years old. I was just with some kids, if you will, and they were 17, 16, and one was 13. They all had one thing in common. Their father was never in the home. What a wild bunch. But it's amazing. I was told later on that they had a tremendous amount of respect for me, because I was drawing lines and I was treating them like young men, you know, and they really appreciated that, because they live with their mom and their sisters. This is a problem.
Well, of course, many young men are raised by a single mother, and in many cases they do a great job. What really is missing in that situation?
Obviously the masculinity, the masculine component. I mean, I've had mothers tell me on many, many occasions, I'm the mother and I'm the father. And I always tell them, you do the work of the mother and the father, and there's no question about that, and I commend you, but never tell your son you're his father, because you're not. And it's confusing for the boys. And so without that positive male role model in their life, without them to someone to look up to and emulate and to be a hero and want to be like, with that missing, there's a tremendous amount of confusion. I find that just about in every case. But it's also very, very refreshing, Tony, when, you know, you're speaking to a young man and he's looking for that guidance. He wants that guidance. He needs that guidance. He asks you. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you this, everything that I've learned about these young men, they have taught me. Yeah, I read a few books, but, you know, when it comes down to it, when it really comes down to it, it's that one-on-one kind of relationship.
It seems to me that what you're talking about is some kind of search for identity as a man.
Yeah, I mean, there's a tremendous identity crisis going on. I mean, you know, video games actually gives them a feeling of masculinity. It's false, because when they go out into the real world, they don't have buttons in their hands. They've got a brain, and the brain is made out of mush. Or lies, if you will. It's nonsense, complete nonsense. And, you know, I, honestly, I mean, you know, boys want to be treated like boys, you know. Even the article that I wrote, you know, they don't mind climbing on furniture. And they don't mind running through the bushes to get where they need to go. You have to know that about them. And, you know, I tell you something real interesting someone told me one time. They said to me, Joe, how do you deal with all the problems of these young men? And I have to tell you honestly, I said, well, you know, I never really thought it that way because I'm surrounded by love. I never really thought of it that way. And besides, if I had a choice to raise thoroughbreds or geldings, I'll always pick the thoroughbred. But you have to know what you're getting into because the thoroughbred doesn't want you to open the door. He wants to kick the door down.
Joe, the very name, the St. Francis House, of course, implies some kind of spiritual context. Are these young men searching for a spiritual dimension in their lives?
You know, they're all searching anyway. And they're searching for God, whether they know it or they don't know it. And like I said when we first started, these are some of the finest young men I've ever met in my life because they're good. And we have a spiritual component to the house. And a lot of times I'll say, you know who's running, if we have a little problem, I might say something, you know who's running this house? And they'll go, oh yes, you, Joe. And I say, no. God's running this house. I'm taking orders from him. And right now you have nothing to say. You'd be surprised how that is welcomed. And so without the spiritual component, without God as the masculine figure as well, without someone, you know, in charge, if you will, in charge. I mean, a lot of these guys like to give orders, but they don't know how to take them. And I always tell them, if you want to give orders, you got to learn how to take them. And right now you're taking them. And if you can take orders, I promise you, someday you'll learn to give them as well. So they understand both sides of the fence. I hope that answered your question.
Yes, indeed. I notice in the article that one of the young men spoke about boundaries and freedom. It sounds like a contradiction.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, boundaries are not a contradiction. There are freedom. You know where you stand. Without those boundaries, there is no freedom. There's chaos. And so there's order. And where you have order, you have God. You know, I'll give you an example. For over 20 years, I think it's maybe 20 years, I never had a dishwasher in the house. Never. I didn't need one, first of all. I had 10 to 15 young men, which gives us 20... to 35 or 40 hands, you know, 40 hands. And what I would do is after dinner, you see, certain people would have to clean up, certain people, you have to work together as a team. There's order in all of that. And there's a place for you in all of that. And you have to know what your place is in life. And you know, you can teach someone simply by cooking dinner, by serving dinner, by eating dinner, and then cleaning up after dinner. Our dinners would last 3 or 4 hours. Start at 6, get out of there at 9. We'd like to get out at 8, but sometimes we would get out at 9. But you know, dinner is a very big thing, and that's what's missing out of many, many families and family life. I'm an old-fashioned guy. I grew up, you know, where mommy would cook, and we waited to have dinner till dad got home. And if dad was late, we ate late, but we ate together. And the thing was is that we ate together. That was the pattern. And in the St. Francis home, we made sure that we had dinner together every single night, and that's where it all happened. Happens at the dinner table.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, indeed. I'm speaking with Joe Campo, director of the St. Francis House in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, New York, about the work of this home for young men who've come from extremely difficult life situations. Joe, let's take one example. In recent times, several young men who live in the St. Francis House participated in the production of The Human Experience, a film which begins, and I've seen it, of course, a film which begins with confronting scenes about homelessness in New York City. Why was this project undertaken?
For many years, Tony, many people have been asking me to write a book on the St. Francis House. I don't have time, and I don't have the desire to write a book, but I can make a film. I've been an artist my whole life, and I believe that if the young men had a chance to express their God-given ability in the world of art, that they would also be able to participate and actually be somebody and feel. You know, I've had everyone's have asked me at the house, you know, after you they're there for a while, you know, they want to know what the meaning of life is. You know, I can't answer that question. I know that we got to get to heaven. I can say things like that, but it doesn't answer that question. What's the meaning of life? I know that there's a destination at the end of all of this. And so I said, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we make a film and go out and ask people what the meaning of life is? And through their experiences, you may discover something about yourself. And, you know, I believe God gives everybody at least one talent. I believe that. The young men here at the St. Francis House have many, many talents. Many talents. And one of my jobs, if you will, here is to recognize that talent. And then once we know what that talent is, we build on that talent. And so we took our cameras and we did what the boys know best. And we only had to walk across the Brooklyn Bridge because our budget was very low at that time. And we decided that they were going to live with the homeless community for a week at least in New York City. And it turned out to be the coldest days that we had in that month.
These were two brothers, as I recall.
This was Cliff and this was Jeffrey, the two brothers who live at the house. And I thought it was great to put the two brothers together simply because Cliff, who is the oldest one, is always cold and Jeffrey is always hot. So you can't put these guys in the same room without having an argument. And so to put them both on film together, a brotherly argument, not a fight, it's a big difference. They can disagree and they should, like we all should. And they learn from that. But to put these two guys out on the street for a week, well, you saw what happened. It was an experience. Quite an experience for them.
They were not the only two people from your home, your house, who participated in this film. There were people behind the scenes, of course.
Everybody that worked on the film lived at the St. Francis House. The director, I was the producer, everybody that starred in it, if you will. But it's a documentary, so there's no stars. What you see is what you get. It is what it is. But yes, the editing, everything that you see that happened in the film, it was produced by the guys at the St. Francis House.
When it was finished, what did they say about the experience?
That's a good question, because Jeffrey, who the film turned out to be about, who became the protagonist in the film, we never told him that he was the protagonist. We never told him he was the lead role in the film. And when we showed the film on the opening, there was over 1,000 people on the opening, and Jeffrey found out for the first time that he was the lead role, and he turned around and he said, "Why didn't you tell me?" And I said, "Well, we didn't think it was that important." So it worked out quite well for him. Because since then, he's traveled around the world at least three times with the film, answering people's questions.
And what response are you getting from people around the world to this film?
Excellent. Absolutely excellent. You know, when I was producing the film, I would like to say, oh, gee, I thought it was a great film. You know, I mean, that's why we did it. We wanted to make a great film. Tony, you never really know that till you put it out in front of the public. And the public response has been tremendously positive. I mean, we have a thing over here called Netflix where you can rent the video. You can rent it, just download the human experience, and it's been downloaded over a million times, if you will. All word of mouth. The young men have traveled to 19 countries showing the film, and at the end of the film, surprising the audience, walking out and doing a question and answer. And they have been asked every personal question you can possibly think about their lives and about the film. And through the St. Francis House, you know, we've given them the strength and the courage to be able to stand up in front of people and answer their questions.
This brings us back to the earlier discussion on search for identity. What has this film done to help these young people gain a sense of self?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when you're searching for the meaning of life and you find bits of it, we don't have all the answers answered. We don't have even all the questions that came up yet in one's life. But life's a lot better now than it was. And sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's the best you're going to get. I don't want to give away the end of the film, but if anyone wants to see it, make sure you stay to the very end. And then, you know, of course, what I'm saying, I don't want to spoil it. You know, when a person finds out where they're from and you're able to build on that and you have an identity, and when you find your identity, there is no identity crisis. You know, that's a big whew, to let go. Your shoulders kind of drop and you feel pretty darn good about yourself and the rest of the world. I mean, Jeffrey will tell you that the way he grew up in a violent home, that he didn't care if anybody died right in front of him. He would just step right over him. It's not the case anymore. As a matter of fact, they live the second commandment. And the second commandment is to take care of your neighbor as much as you would take care of yourself. So they really put people first. And that truly is one of the secrets to life. And I tell this to people all the time. If you really want to be happy, learn to give more than you take. If you're able to give more than you take, I can promise you joy. I don't know about happiness. Happiness is outside of us. But the joy that you're looking to experience on the inside comes from giving, not from taking.
Joe, when you meet young people that you worked with 5, 10, 20 years ago, what do you see?
I'm very happy to see them. Their children call me grandpa. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, wonderful feelings and things that go on. A young man just wrote to me and said, thank you for saving my life. And you hear all these wonderful things, Tony. But, I don't feed off that too much. I believe that I'm doing exactly what God called me to do. But I'm one of those guys who actually thinks about the guys that didn't make it more than I think about the guys that did. I don't have this great joy and you know, people pat me on the back and I kind of wonder where that's coming from. But they just see that, you know. But I'm involved with the whole ball of wax, if you will. You know, I have many young men who didn't make it. I have many young men who were back, you know, in jail. And then we have guys who try to hurt themselves and kill themselves, and I'm back working with them, and I'm kind of stuck in that, if you will. And I think that's where I'm supposed to be. I think that's where I do my best work. And even Saturday, I'm going over one of the guys' houses. It's his birthday. He's 37 years old. I met him when he was 17. I've been a father figure in his life, and it's his daughter's birthday, and so he invited me over. They're going to cook. And, you know, I love to go there and I'm going to enjoy it. But at the same time, I'm one of those guys who thinks about, you know, one of the young men who's finally getting back up on his feet after he tried to hurt himself a year ago. And he just got in contact with me. So, yeah, I mean, I love to see the guys doing well. I mean, we have a lot of great stories. I can tell you guys who are now married, have beautiful wives, they have children, they have a house and 2 cars. And you know, all that really did come through the St. Francis House. But, I was a good, positive role model in their lives. But I will say to you honestly that they did all the work. They did it. Yes, I was a guide. Yes, I helped them. Of course, I was there. They gave me a good life, too. But the fact is that they actually did the work, and they pulled out of it. It's called breaking the cycle of poverty. And they did it. They put up with me all these years, too, you know.
Joe, what you're saying sounds to me like many ordinary, if I can use the word, ordinary yeah. families. The highs, the lows, the important things, the successes, the things that maybe don't work out.
It's all there, Tony.
It's all there.
And when you're going to do this kind of work, you have to expect, no one likes it, but you have to expect what else goes with it, and that's a lot of suffering. And you've got to, and you know, when I go through that, I know that I have young men watching me do that, and they see how a man suffers. Their mother would cry, you know. I might even shed a tear, but I do it in a masculine way. I do it the way that I know how to do it. The only way that I know how to do it, I do it what's natural to me. They get to see that. As a matter of fact, I remember one time when I broke down, a person passed away in my life. And when I found out about it, I kind of broke down. And I never did that before, even with my own family. And I was surrounded with all the guys. And you know, they wanted to know what was going on. And I did not want to cry in front of them. I did not want to. But it came out. And I've done interventions here in the house, and they were kind of like, we know something's wrong. They sat me down. They closed the door. This is what I've done to them. Okay, now I want to know what's going on, and I want to know now. And I had four guys do that to me, young men. And I said, wow, there's an intervention, and I'm on the hot seat.
Yeah.
But I let them know what was happening, and everything that we taught them over the years, hopefully they're going to bring that to their families. You know, I had an argument with one of the boys that I love the most in the house. You know, you have your favorites sometimes. And if anybody says they don't, they're not telling you the truth. We do. Even Jesus had his favorites.
Yeah.
And I said to the young man, I said, you know, we just no matter what happened, we could not find a solution to this problem, no matter what. He was going to disagree with me, no matter what. Adolescents do that. So I said to him, finally, you really think this argument is about you, don't you? And he looked at me and he said, well, it's just you and I. I said, no, it's not. No. This argument is about you and your son, you and your daughter, because the way you're treating me right now is exactly the way you're going to treat your family, or you're going to learn from me right now and know how to deal with your child. This is about you and your future. And I'll tell you, it's the first time I ever got through to this guy. It was a breakthrough. I said, it's about you. It's about you being a father, not being a son. How would you handle this if you were a father? You'll find out, and I want to be there when it happens.
Joe, it's been a pleasure to talk with you today. It's been a pleasure to see the film. And I very much valued your article in New Male Studies. Thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Tony. My pleasure.
I've been speaking with Joe Campo, director of the St. Francis House in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, New York. The website of the St. Francis House is sfhbrooklyn.com. That's sfhbrooklyn.com. The full article by Joe Campo is published in New Male Studies, Volume 2, Issue 1, 2013. It's available in full online, newmalestudies.com. This Skype interview was recorded in February 2013 in Adelaide, South Australia. I'm Tony Ryan.